would be prohibited on these days as well. So Rav Chista, Rav Yehuda bar Abba, so Rav Chista said, in the name of Rav Yehuda bar Abba, says, Omar Kroh, the Pasuk says, it's a Pasuk taken from the prophet Joel. Joel, in his time, there was a tremendous plague of locusts that came and they ate up all the vegetation and so on. And so he says to the people, you know, Kachut Tzom, literally sanctify a fast day, Kiru Atzora, and proclaim an Atzora. Now, Atzora we translate as a day of gathering, a solemn gathering, okay? Solemn festival, if you wish.
Not
and then
sorrow.
He says, Isfusakanim, gather the elders, right? So he says, Ka'atzeres, in other words, the fast, according to Joel, right, is to be compared to the Atzeres. And Ma'atzeres asu ba'asiyas b'locha, and just as Atzeres, by the way, the word Atzeres, you know, which we translated a moment ago, is a solemn assembly or something like that. So the Torah uses it to describe, of course, the 8th day of Sukkot, so calls it, you know, a separate festival. It's called Shemini Atzeres. In the Talmud, the word Atzeres is used to describe Shavuos. So, in either case, I mean, whether it's Shavuos or whether it's Shemini Atzeres, these are solemn days, and those days is also Basiyas Melacha. They are prohibited, right. You know, you're not allowed to do labor on those days. So, Aftanis, if that's the case, then the fast day too is also Basiyas Melacha. You're not allowed to do work on that day. So, the Gemara now begins to question this, and it says, wait a minute. Says Ima Atzeres Miyurta Aftanis Lame Miyurta. If you say that Atzeres, you know, the day of solemn rest, has to begin at eventide and evening, right? In other words, when do we begin every day in our Jewish calendar?
The previous year.
Right, and when does Yom Tov begin? Always begins
the night before.
At night. Okay, the night before. So Aftanis Lame Miyurta, then the implication would be that the fast then should also begin at night, right? At the night before. So Rabbi Zeira. So Rabbi Zeira said, he says, I have the following interpretation of what he had to say. Omakwa, the Torah said, as the verse in the Bible said, Isfuzakanim, right? Gather ye the elders. So he says, Dum Yodasivakanim. He says the fast should be like when it comes time to gather the elders together. Ma sefa sekeinim bayom. When do you gather elders together, let's say, for judgment or for whatever it may be? It's in the daytime. At night they need sleep. So just as you gather them together during the day, so aptsom nami bayom. In that case then, it proves that fasting should only be during the day. So maybe I should say that perhaps it should begin at noon, so Rayim, right? So Omar Rav Sheisha, Rav Idi, he says, Messiah Leila Rav Huna, he says, no. This agrees with the statement that Rav Huna made elsewhere, where he said, the Omar said, Mitzafra Kenufiyam, that in the morning, that's when they get together. So Hechi Avdei, what should they do? So Abaye said as follows. He says, Mitzafro ad palgo de yoimo. He says, when they get together, so from the time of morning until halfway through the day, in other words, till noon, ma'ayinin b'milei denasa. What they have to do is to go over the various events that have taken place in the town to see whether any injustice has been done, in which case, you know, they should have charota and they should pray to God, you know, for forgiveness. The kanda elech, after noon has passed, riva de yomo, then for the next quarter of the day, in other words, the next 3 hours, karinim b'sifra, they study the Bible, the haftarto, and they also recite a haftarah, and the kanda elech, and then from that point on, the inan rachme, they pray. In other words, they daven mincha, and they say all kinds of other prayers. Shneimar, As the pasuk says, and this is a pasuk that we find in the book of Nehemiah, it says, "Vayakumu al omdom," that they arose where they were, "Vayikru b'sefer Torah Hashem l'heihem," and they read the sefer of God's Torah, "Reviz hayom," for a quarter of the day, "Reviz," and for a quarter of the day, "Misvadim," they confessed. And they bow down to the Lord their God. Okay, so we finished this daf. Yes, Hashem, shall continue
on Yud Gimel.
Yud Gimel next week.
Daf Aleph.
Right. Yud Gimel Daf Aleph next. The passage from Joel, we also find this part of Shabbos Shuva. Part of the Haftorah that we read. Actually, we read several Haftorahs on that particular day. Day of Atonement afternoon has to be before the Day of Atonement. Okay. What did they do with Undid? What did they do with Shabbos Shuva? Let's be over here.
During the war, you mean, no?
During the war, right. Okay, here we are. All right. He says over there, in that same, chapter over there, he says that, Bein hu lom v'la mizbeach, which means between the area, where you have the main building of the temple. I mean, this building consists of, there was different buildings over there. And the altar, Yivku HaKohanim, let the priests weep, B'shoshei Hashem, who served the Lord, V'yomru, and let him say as follows, Chusar Hashem HaLamecho, have mercy, O Lord, upon thy people, V'yaltetein Achlos HaLacher, Polim Shol Bokoyim, and do not give your heritage, do not make them to be disgraced, so that the goyim should rule over them. Loma yomu v'amim v'yeloheim. Why should the goyim say, or why should the nation say, where is their God? So that we see over there that definitely the Beis Hamikdash is involved in the description that we have in the book of the prophet Joel. But again, what I said before, it could also be that local communities would do it in an area where it's not raining, and other communities where the rain is plentiful, then that they would be excused from fasting.
Mm.
Unless it was a matter that the authorities felt that this was a national disaster, in which case everybody in the nation should observe that. Yeah. They had it recently in Eretz Yisrael. There was a drought, and then the rabbis decided to gather together, proclaim a fast day, and of course they had a gathering at the Kotel. And when they came together at the Kotel, at that moment, rain started to fall. So everybody was happy, and they did not have to continue. Yeah, happened.
This is
how you
have to
wash it. Well, this I got to learn from my children, They told me that. All right. So far, what is the, as we would say, the Seder Hayom, in other words, what is happening on that day? So we see a half a day that's supposed to consider, what's going on in town, and so on, see how they can improve the situation so that the God should be pleased with them and not be displeased with them. And then a quarter was devoted to reading, studying Torah and the Torahs and so on, or as I said, the prophets. And then the other one is, in other words, the last quarter of the day is when they daven, right? So now the Gemara says, on the top of Yud Gimel, it says, Ipachano, maybe I should reverse the order. In other words, maybe the first thing that they should do is to study, let's say, and then to pray, or maybe pray first and then study, and then only in the last part of the day, the last half of the day, should they then deal with communal matters? Why did you, in other words, push off the major prayers until the late afternoon? Until, as we would say, mincha time or something like that, right? So he says, Lo sakol da'atech, no, he says, don't even let it enter your mind. Desiv, because we got another pasuk, also from the book, this time it's the book of Ezra, okay? And it's written over there, V'yelai ye'asfu kol chored b'divrei alihei Yisrael, and unto me they're gathered, everyone who trembles for the words of the Lord, the God of Israel, al ma'al ha'gola, because of the treachery of the people in exile. And of course, what was the treachery that they had committed? They had married
Goyim,
right? Goyas. Okay. And what was left out over here is the next group of psukim from the book of Ezra, and Rashi supplies it. Thank you, Rashi. So let's take a look and see. Al mal hagol. You see over there?
Yeah.
Right. It says Vani. The rest of the pasuk says Vani Yoshev Mishtamein, and I was sitting like in a stupor. In other words, he was meditating, and you know, showed no activity. Ad minchas ha'erev. Until, you know, the time came for the evening mincha. Because, I mean, we take mincha in the sense of a prayer. But what was the original meaning of mincha?
Sacrifice.
Right, it was the particularly the ketores, right. The afternoon sacrifice and the ketores that was burnt in conjunction with it. Right. Well, the mincha so erev, and then when it came time for the mincha of the evening, so kamti mitan nisi, right, I arose from my fasting, uvikori bigdig, and tearing my garments, umeili, and my jacket, and my coat, and my cloak, veechrecho al birkai, and I knelt upon my knees, v'aforsoh kapai el Hashem Elokai, and I spread out my hands unto the Lord my God. So what do we see? We see that, what does it say over there? Minchas Erev Kamti, right? In other words, Ezra is saying that I arose, and when was it? It was the Minchas Erev. And therefore saw Kapai El Hashem, and at that point I raised my hands in supplication unto God. So we see from Ezra's actions that again, when should the prayer be recited particularly, and the answer is at Milchah 9. Alright, so now that we've decided, you know, that should be, as we would say, the Seder Hayom, in other words, the procedure of that particular day, so now we go into, in general, what are permitted activities and what are prohibited activities. Omar Avraham bar Papa. Rav Rachman Bar Papa said, Omar Rav Chisda, the name of Rav Chisda, he said, Kol Shehu Mishum Evel, any fast which contains any element of mourning, Kigon Tisha B'Av, such as Tisha B'Av, or the Evel, or maybe it should be read or veiled, but it's all the same. I mean, the idea is still the same.
Oh.
Someone who is sitting, you know, he's not veiled. In other words, to us, of course, it means particularly someone, you know, who's sitting Shiva, okay, is observing Shiva, and mourning for his very close beloved ones. So it's osur bein becham b'mitzvah. You are prohibited from washing yourself, and it makes no difference whether it's with warm water or with cold water. This is what he says. Okay? Alright. Now, this is the opinion of Rav Chisda. We'll see that it's going to be questioned. Alright? Kol Shehum, however, he continues, Kol Shehum Mishum Tanuk, when a person fasts simply because you know, he realizes that you know, he hasn't done the right thing, or maybe there's some other reason or something, you know, for fasting, but it's not as a result of mourning. That's the point. It's not a result of mourning. Kigon Tanis Sibur, as for example a Tanis Sibur, in other words, a congregate public fast, then in that case he says Bechamin also, it's prohibited to bathe with hot water, but Bitzonein Mutar, with cold water, it is permitted. Omar Avidi Barobin, and said, he says, look, we have also learned another Baraisa. What does it say over there? It says, and they lock, actually, it's a Mishnah a little bit later on, and they lock up the bathhouses. Yeah, right, we had this Mishnah already, that they lock up the bathhouses. Yes, right, it was before, yeah. So, which means what? Therefore, we prove it means that you can't wash, right? So, Amalei Abaye. So, Abaye said, look, the Ibitzonin Osur, if it is prohibited to wash with cold water, then in that case, it shouldn't be just that they lock up the bathhouses. Sochron is how the horse be boiling, the mystic. They should learn then that you also have to shut up the streams. Obviously, you can't shut up the streams. You could dam them, perhaps, but even the final analysis.
When they say washing, they refer to bathing, or they mean, you mean you can't even
this
wash your hands?
This is a little bit
vague.
It is a little vague. Okay. From our point of view, of course, so we would have to say, we would have to make a distinction between bathing the entire body and just washing your hands and face. And this is what we'll be reading, right, we'll be learning this, and also we'll do it together with...
Because even on Shabbos, you're allowed to at least wash your hands.
Yeah, correct. On Shabbos, we're allowed. I mean, with Shabbos, the problem is, you know, that you shouldn't be using hot water on Shabbos, because you would be tempted, you know, to heat the water, which you're not supposed to do. As for example, let's say if you put on the hot water on Shabbos, you know, your heater automatically is taking cold water then, and it's heating it up, and it's using oil or it's using electricity in order to do it. So this is the reason why we prohibit it. Okay? But I would venture to say that if, for example, you had a pot of hot water, a thermos or something like that, where, you know, you're not using the hot water from the sink, then it would be permissible to use some hot
like
water.
Like having an urn of
right,
water.
Right,
hot
exactly.
Water.
Yeah. Okay, so what is the conclusion so far? So far the conclusion is that, wait, why are the merchatzois, why are the bathhouses closed? Because they use what? They use hot water. But who says that cold water should be prohibited? What are you going to do? You're going to dam up every stream so that there's no cold water running? You have to remember, they didn't have running water where you open the tap, you see.
Uh-huh.
They had to use other. Okay. Let's take a look for a moment at the Taisvis over there. We'll start him first with Omar Rav Chisda, Kolchim Shum. Okay.
That's the top.
Right.
Third line.
Yeah.
Omar Rav Chisda.
All right. So Omar Rav Chisda, Kolchim Shum, I will. Kegon Tishabov, no, fast, in other words, which are there because of fasting, because of mourning, as for example Tishabov, so also Rafila B'tzayin. On those days it is prohibited even with cold water. The Ovel, right, also Be'mecham and Be'mecham. And also the same thing also holds true that a person who is sitting Shiva is also prohibited to wash with either hot water or cold water. Now, Tosfos adds over here now, Yerushalmi, in the Gemara Yerushalmi we find that a certain Yosef Bered Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Yosef the son of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, but Tisha B'av Yom HaKippurim, on Tisha B'av and on Yom Kippur, Marchitz Yodov, he would wash his hands, presumably with what? With cold water. Wash his hands with cold water, Umekaneach B'mapa, and then he would wipe it with a cloth, and then he would pass it over his eyes. In other words, we take the wet cloth or the wet towel and put it over his eyes. Rabbi Yonah, another authority quoted in Rishonim, says tres matute. He would wet rags, the yahir tuse karein, he put it underneath his pillow, perish hoyamanech smatu tachasakar. In other words, you know, the Taisus is explaining that this is what he did, that he put this wet rag underneath the pillow, kedele lach lecho, in order to moisten it, to ma'avir al gabeinu. So we see what? We see from this that both on Tisha B'Av and on Yom Kippur you are permitted to use cold water in order to wash your hands, although I have to tell you that the Shulchan Aruch and so on, it restricts it only at Kishrei Etzvos, and only up to over here, in other words.
Over the knuckle.
Right, yeah. Up to here, you can do it, but otherwise you can't. And yeah, then you can go over your eyes over here, because, you know, there's, you know, it gets sticky and so on, so that, that way you can clear it. So that this is the din as far as both Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur is concerned, and they more or less follow the same thing as far as an Ovil, as far as a person sitting shiva is concerned, as far as the din is concerned. Are there exceptions to it? Maybe. For this you have to ask a shayla. Okay? And then the next thing that it said over there is, however, if it is a tainis, kol shehu mishum tanug, if you remember, that if it is, you know, in order to cut down on pleasure, so in that case, now it says, place for something else. It says Miyakshav. Now he says, Shein Tanisimu B'Bovel, where we do not have a community fast in Babylonia, as we've explained, you know, for the rain. And it does not, therefore, we do not observe all the chumras, all the restrictions on any fast day with the exception of Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, right? So Elat on those days, says Tosfos, we can even use warm water. Afilo Yud Zayin B'Tammuz, even on the 17th of Tammuz, Litzom Gedalia, and the fast of Gedalia. Kach Pasak Rabia, this was the Pasak of Rabia, was one of the later Middle Ages, one of the great places came over there. But Rabbi Yoel Oviv, however, his father Rabbi Yoel, Osar Lichotz Bechamin, he prohibited bathing in hot water. So as we see, there is a machloikis as to whether it's proper or not.
Bathing in hot water.
In hot water, warm water. When warm I say chamin, it doesn't mean necessarily hot. Mm-hmm. It means warm, all right? So the question is, in other words, could you take a shower on Shabbos and Tammuz? The answer is, if you're filthy or something like that, and you feel, you know, that you need it, so you have at least somebody to rely upon, okay? Then it says, of course, for no alamirtzoris, right, that they lock up the bathhouses, perish why shehen chavim, because you know the water there is hot. So then it says, atu, this should be sochrin. Yeah, in my book it's a little bit dorked out. Sochrin the horse. So tell me, are they going to go and lock up? Are they going to dam up the streams? Kolomer, yehava also b'tzonei. If it were prohibited with cold water, the ikol and business, how could anybody even teach us that sochrin nechoros? Pshito delemotz lemischa. It's obvious that you cannot do it. Klomer kemo kach lo sidoy. In other words, this way it says, don't be so exacting. The hode katoni v'no alamirzo is from the fact, you know, that it says that they lock up, but the fact is that if you cannot dam up, then it means that you are permitted to use cold water. That you can do. Okay. let's see how far did I get over here. Yeah. Omale Abaye. So Abaye said to him, oh, Afana Name Tanina, right? Omar Adidi Barobin. So we too have learned, yes, that we've learned that no alin is a mechzoris. We learned, we lock up the bathhouses. So what that implies only for hot water. So I'm going to buy it, but he be saying, no, so something's been boiled. Oh, that I already did.
Yeah,
All right, so Omar Rav Shesha, Bereda Rav Ibi. So Rav Shesha, the son of Rav Ibi, said, Abba Hochi Kasha says, you know, I want to tell you, it says, my father, in other words, about Edi, he had a difficulty. Let's see. We have learned in the Mishnah that also Birchitza, right, on these fast days, you know, when it gets really serious, you're prohibited to bathe. So if you're prohibited from bathing, then why is it necessary to lock up the bathhouses? Elalav shmamino bechaminose. So rather than from this, we have to understand the conclusion is that with hot water it's prohibited, because that's why it says they lock up the bathhouses, right? But betzonein muta. With cold water it would be permissible. So lema. Now the Gemara says, all right, so shall we say mesayale, that in support of this we have another quotation. This is a Gemara that we find in several other places where it says, "Kol chayevei tevilos tovin kedarkon." Whenever a person must immerse himself in the mikveh, so you're permitted to do it the way you normally do, bein b'tisha b'av, even if it's tisha b'av, or bein b'yom kippur, even if it is yom kippur. Okay. Actually, we do not immerse ourselves on Yom Kippur. But the idea is, who are they talking about? They were talking about, first of all, let's say a woman at the end of her period of menstruation, okay? She should go to the mikveh in order to cleanse herself. What if that day happened to be Tisha B'av? So this would imply that she would be permitted to go and to immerse herself in the mikveh on Tisha B'av itself, in order that when the night came, you know, she would be permissible to her husband, right? Actually, we don't follow that din, but as I say, this is what the argument is. And when Yom Kippur, of course, I mean, you know that there are people who go and immerse themselves in the mikveh on Yom Kippur. It's a mitzvah, Erev Yom Kippur, right, Erev Yom Kippur, it's a mitzvah, but there are others who also go Yom Kippur itself before the davening, really? Right? They're going to immerse themselves, right? I mean, many Hasidim do it. It's considered an act of chassidus, you know, of piety, you see, to immerse yourself before. And of course, that's based upon the fact that in the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen Gadol actually had five times during the course of the Avodah, five times during the course of the Yom Kippur service, which he had to perform, he had to immerse himself in the mikveh. Why five times? Because every time that he changed his garments in order to engage in a different type of an activity, he had to change his garments. At one point he was wearing linen garments, another point he had to change into gold garments, then back again into linen garments, then back again into gold garments, and this is the way it went, you see. So, you know, for different parts of the service, it was required for him to do that. So, five times he had to, naturally, I don't have to tell you that in the Beis HaMikdash, they had a mikveh over there. And the Kohen Gadol used it, and Kahanim who had to perform the service, also, they also had to go to the mikveh and so on. Because a Kohen who was impure could not serve. He had to be in a state of purity. So certainly, even on Yom Kippur, you know, he had to be in a state of purity in order to perform his part in the divine service in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? So, what are they questioning over here? Says Bamai. Now, what are we talking about? Ilema bechamin. If we are to say that they can immerse themselves even in warm water in the mikveh, so tevila bechamin miyikor. So the Gemara says, tell me, is there such a thing as immersing yourself in warm water? Shuvaninu. The only way you can get hot water is to heat it up in buckets, right? And then pour it into the mikveh. And that is absolutely prohibited. When I say prohibited, I have to say something about the construction of a mikveh. Okay? Elalav b'tzon. But rather we have to say that they are permitted to toivel, in other words, to immerse themselves, but only in cold water. Okay. This is a difficult business because, you know, Americans like comfort. So that in the modern American mikvahs, it isn't enough, you know, that they go into a mikveh of cold water, but they want to have the water warmed up. So how is this possible? The answer is it's possible only by virtue of the fact that once you have the required amount in the mikveh,
certain amount,
there is a minimum, as we say, 40 se'or, right? It's quite a few gallons, you know, but once you have the minimum, then you can add to it by Mishu'uvim if you want, and will not make the mikveh pasul. If you have less, then automatically the mikveh is no good, and then you'd have to drain it and wait until the next rainfall or snowfall or something to come in to fix it, okay? But you are permitted to have she'uvim in the mikveh. So as a result, our mikveh in Springfield, for example, does have heating, and it is possible, you know, for the water to go through coils in order to go in. But it would not be kosher if it weren't for the fact that we have regular water in the mikveh at all times, standing there at all times. Now, of course, he asks another question, but don't they empty the mikveh from time to time?
Well, to clean it.
Yeah, to clean it and so on. So the answer is that there is another pit, as we would say, a bore, or well, whatever you want to call it. But that contains the requisite amount of water in it, and that there is a connection between that and the other one. So we know that there's always at least the minimum amount of water that's, you know, perfectly kosher water to begin with, and then if you add water to it, so it's not going to make it possible. So it's
solar.
Well, that would be an interesting invention. Yeah,
because then nobody's eating the water. I
would say that, for example, you're permitted to go into a pond of water also if it's deep enough and immerse yourself in that, or in the river or something like that. Now, if it happens to be in the middle of the summer and it's warm, there's no law against that, because it's natural at that particular point. So I wouldn't say that it would make it possible. It certainly wouldn't, because in a few moments we'll see that in Eretz Yisrael they had one special place where they had hot water supplied naturally, and that was
a lot of solar heating in Israel.
Yeah, today it is. Everybody absolutely. Everybody puts them up on the roof because it makes it more economical to have hot water. Right, the sun heats it up. When it's the winter and there isn't enough, or let's say it's a very cloudy day and it hasn't warmed up, so then they supplement it with electric heating in order to heat up the water. But like this, during the course of the day, you can have plenty of hot water in Israel simply by virtue of the solar reflectors that they have. And that is known in Hebrew as a dud shemesh. All right, so Chuvin Linu, he says, right? El Allah B'tzonin, so then he must conclude that the mikveh that we're talking about, where he goes in to immerse himself, is in cold water. V'chayevei tevilos in inishachvina lo, and those people who are required, you know, to immerse themselves, as we said, like the case of the woman, for example, right?
Yeah,
so, all right, she would be permitted, let's say, on Tisha B'Av, let's say, to immerse herself, right? But in a shachvina lo, but somebody else no. So Amarav Chona Bar Katina says lo nitzvecha. He says, you know where we have to use this interpretation. Ela lachame Tiberia. It's for the hot springs of Tiberia. In Tiberio, they have springs coming out of the ground, hot springs. So there, it should be permitted, you know, to immerse yourself in it, even though it's hot water. Okay? So the question is, Yehochi, if that's the case, Emo Sefer, so how about quoting the rest of the statement that you quoted to me? Omer Rav Chanina Skana Kohanim, that Rabbi Chanina, who was the deputy Kohen Gadol, Sagan, we use today in modern Hebrew to mean like a vice president or something like that, right? One who takes the place of the. So Rabbi Chanina, Sagan HaKohanim, he says, Kedai hu beis Eloheinu. He says, the house of our Lord is worth it. La abid alof tevilo pamachas b'shana. That we should, as a result of it, skip once during the course of the year immersion, even though it's immersion in the right time, nothing doing. You should not immerse yourself on Tisha B'Av because of the fact that it's a time of mourning, and for mourning, we can dispense with it. It would be the proper thing to dispense. Yeah.
Then how about Yom Kippur?
Yom Kippur is a different story. You cannot equate Yom Kippur with Tisha B'Av.
I understand that, but I mean,
things, you know,
does the same rule apply there?
No, because as I said, there are those who, well, a woman would not be permitted to go on Yom Kippur. No, that definitely not. Okay, the only people who would be permitted to immerse themselves on Yom Kippur would be those, as I said, who do it either as a mark of chassidus, or in the case, let's say, of a Baal Tefillah or something like that, who wants to immerse himself. Yeah. Again, that's the same Tzibur, idea, yeah. Right? Yeah. The Yiyamet Tzoynin Mutar, and if you had said that it's permitted, you know, to immerse yourself in cold water, then Yichatz Tzoynin, so let him bathe in cold water. In other words, even on Tisha B'Av would be the implication. So I'm a Rapapa, so Rapapa says, B'Ashva L'Shukeh Tzoynin. We're talking about a place where cold water is not common. Toshba. Come and listen, he says. In other words, they pursue the argument a little more. When they said that it is prohibited to do labor on these fast days, they restricted it only during the daytime. But at night, it's permissible, right? And when they say that it is prohibited to wear shoes, lo amru elo ba'ir, then this applies when you're actually in the city and you're among Jews. This is the implication. Avol baderech, but if you have to walk on the way, then mutar, it is permissible. Or ketsa, so what should he do if he has to go on a trip, or has to go walking? Because in those days they didn't have cars to go in, but you know they walked for the most part. So he says, Yotze Laderech, when he starts out on the road, then in that case, Noel, he puts on his shoes. Nichdas La'ir, but when he enters the city and he's now among Yidden, then in that case, Holitz, he takes off his shoes. Uchsha Omru also Rechisa, and how about when they said it is prohibited to bathe? So he says, Lo Yomru Elakol Gufay. They meant that you're not allowed to bathe the entire body. Avol ponov yodov raglov mutar, but your face, your hands, and your feet, they are permitted to bathe. V'chein ato motzei b'menude uve ovel, and you find that the same rule applies also to a menude and to an ovel. All right, what is a menude? A menude is a person who has been placed under the ban of excommunication, so to speak. In other words, if the Beis Din saw that a person was behaving himself in a way that was contrary to the welfare of the community, then they had the right to declare him a menuda, which means he was now in nidui. Nobody was supposed to have intercourse with him. I mean, you know, not to
talk to him, associate with him,
not associate with him, and things like that, and so on. And normally, if there was no time limit set, so 30 days would be sufficient, and I hope that by the end of 30 days, you know, he would come to his senses and do what he's supposed to do as a member of the community. But they could, of course, make it much less period than that, too, if they wanted to. To make it for a week or something like that, as we find. For example, who was in a week? She was placed under the ban. It was Miriam. Mm-hmm. We read about in the Torah this past week. After 7 days, she had to suffer. That would be worthwhile. I would put her underneath you for more than a month.
I'd say until she had chorus.
Right. So, what happens in the case of Menuda? Even though he's under a ban and he cannot, you know, he's supposed to therefore exhibit signs of mourning. In other words, this is meant for him to repent and change his ways and so on. But nevertheless, what is he permitted to do? He's also permitted to wash his hands and face and his feet with cold water, that he can hold water. Of course, the feet, we understand, they went around Borvis for the most part. In other words, shoes were an expensive commodity. Of course, he wore sandals, but even sandals cost geld, okay? So very often, I mean, they would go barefoot, except, you know, in a case of necessity, like going on the road, where it was necessary because of the hardships of the road to put on sand.
Oh, to walk on pavement.
Right, absolutely. And the kind of pavement that they had in those days. I mean, it wasn't, you know, a nice smooth highway the way we had.
I know.
It wasn't. Okay. And the same law applies then to an Ovid, that he can wash his hands and his face and his feet, right? So they say, my lad akuhu. Why shouldn't we say that the Ovel, that these restrictions that we mentioned apply to everyone? With a Maya Skinon, and what are we dealing with? So, Ilema Bechamin, if we say concerning hot water, do they then permit a person to use warm water in order to wash his hands, his feet, his face? The Omer Rav Sheshes, didn't Rav Sheshes say that Obel, that a person who was in mourning, Osir Lahoshet Esboi, is prohibited to put his finger Bechamin into hot water. El Alav, but rather we have to say, what is he permitted to wash? Bitzoni, right? Only with cold water. So they say, lo, no. Let's get back again and say, what are we talking about? Says the Eilom Becham. The Taka was saying that you are permitted to wash with hot water, but when? And if you have this difficulty in trying to understand why a contradiction, one says yes, one says no. Bechenato Motse Bimenuda Ve'ovil, where it says, and likewise you find the same restrictions applied to a person under the ban or a mourner. So it's Asharo. We're talking about the other things, but not about washing. In other words, we're talking about wearing shoes, we're talking about doing work, but not about washing. Washing, there's no question that you're only permitted to wash with cold water if you are in these unfortunate circumstances. Toshka. Now they bring another example. The Omer Rabbi Abba HaKohen, Mishum Rabbi Yosef HaKohen. Rabbi Abba HaKohen said in the name of Rabbi Yosef HaKohen, he says, Maseh. You know, we have an event or a story about Umesu Bonov Shal Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Chanina, that the children of Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Chanina died. They died, you know, while their father was still living. The Rochatz Betzoyne in Kol Shiva. And he washed or he bathed in cold water all 7 days. So they say, Hossam, there it's an unusual case. Why? This is a case where he was in a state of mourning, and no sooner did he finish one state of mourning than another state of mourning, and then another state of mourning, because he lost several children, so that he really never had a chance, you know, to recover from the period of avelos.
They didn't all die at the same time.
No, they didn't all die simultaneously. They died, you know, at different times, but one after another. Okay. The Tanya, right? As we have learned, Techofuhu Avelo Zarchazeh, when you know the mourning overtakes them one after another, so Hichbid Zaro, if his hair in the meantime has grown heavy, so they give you permission. Now, normally, we know you're not allowed to do what? You're not allowed to take a haircut, right? But in this particular case, where he never had a chance even to cut his hair because of continually having to observe avelos, so they said, Mekel Betar, he is permitted to lighten his hair. In other words, he's permitted, you know, to cut off some of the hair, but with what? With a razor. As we'll see, they say, with a razor and not with scissors afterwards. Let's say it's a similar quotation. Okay? So that they permitted him to do. Umechabes kisuso, And they also permitted him to wash his garment b'mayim, in water, just plain water. So Omar Rav Chisa, and Rav Chisa explains what I said a moment ago, b'tar, right? Yes, he is permitted to cut away some hair, but it has to be with a razor and not with scissors. Now, when they're talking about a tar, they don't mean, of course, an electric razor. What they mean is, of course, you know, a straight razor. That, you know, like you cut through it or something like
that's
that.
Talking about
like
right. Razor.
Thinning your
right,
hair.
Right.
Thinning it. Thinning your hair.
Right, right. Right. He's permitted to do that. Correct. Yeah. Huh? With a straight razor, right. Those days he didn't have safety razors.
Gillette right. Wasn't born yet.
Right, Gillette wasn't born yet. Right. Take a look at the last Tosfos over there, where it says, Hichbit Sarim Meikel, right, it says Batar. Perish, he says, the explanation is Derech Hasicha. It's as though he's cutting. He's using a knife to cut. That's what he's doing. Avolo Kedarko Derech Kiluch, but not in the ordinary way in which you cut hair. Midako Omar Meikel, because he says, Meikel, the local Omar Megalech. He does not use the word Megalech. In other words, all that he's saying is you can make the hair lighter, you can thin it out, but he doesn't say you can shave or you can cut your hair.
That's Megalech.
Megalech, we use today in the sense of to shave, yeah. Right? But in the time of the Gemara, it meant not only shaving, it meant in general, I mean, cutting hair or, shaving. Although at times they also have another verb to cut the hair, and that's the verb "masaper." We know that the word "masaper" normally means to tell, but "masaper" also has another meaning, and it means that means to take a haircut. That is, you know, to cut the hair. Okay, his "taper" is to take a haircut. In other words, the reflexive form. Okay, and from this we have the word for a barber, which is
"sapar."
Sapar, exactly. Sapar is the one who cuts your hair.
So it's for hair, yeah. Hair.
And of course, hair, what is sapar connected with? The word misparaya.
Right, misparaya.
Scissors. So you can see how Hebrew roots, you know, they come together, exactly.
And that produces a tisporah.
Right.
Haircut.
Correct. Okay. All right, so we said, Rav Chisda says, right, he adds that he can do it with the tar, with the straight razor, right? But not with scissors. Bimayim, he's permitted to wash his garment because he's been wearing the same garment day in and day out. Obviously, it needs a cleaning, it needs a washing. So he can do it with water. Velo benetar, but not with nitre. Nitre or natron, this was an ancient form of soap.
Nitre, yeah.
Right. So they use that. So you cannot use soap in order to launder. As a sign of mourning, below bechol, nor with sand. Okay, apparently some use a very fine sand in
like
order
a
to
like a
like a pumice, right? Very right. Good, in order to get some of the stains out and so on. Yeah, Omar Rava, Rava said, all bail, a person who is in mourning, is mutar. Robert's opinion that he is permitted to bathe. He can bathe, in other words, his body, not just his hands and his face, but he is permitted to bathe his body in cold water during Shiva. Mida Dahava, and he says you can compare this to the fact that Abisra Bechamra, to eating meat and drinking wine. We have various stages of mourning, as you're aware, okay? When the person who is, your immediate relative passes away, then you automatically go into a state that we call onen. That's the first stage of mourning, okay? Onen extends from the moment of death until the time that the burial has taken place. Okay, and the Torah specifically prohibits. Of course, the Shulchan Aruch comes along, you know, and adds to it. Our Chachamim, they add to it. The two of the prohibitions that they have in the state of Onen or Aninus, which is the abstract noun for it, not to eat meat and not to drink wine. Okay, this is a sign of great mourning, of great sorrow. Okay,
excuse from praying.
Yes, correct. As we learned, you don't say Ishwan Esri, don't say Krishna, and so on during that time. Why? Because you have to concentrate upon taking care of the burial, seeing that the person who has passed away gets a decent burial. And also, we learned you don't put on tefillin. That's right. Another thing that is prohibited. So these are things that are prohibited during Aninus. However, once the burial has taken place, then at this particular point we begin the observance of Shiva. And of course we know in Shiva we are prohibited from doing some of the things that we've already mentioned, prohibited from doing labor, we are prohibited from bathing the entire body, right? Can only wash, you know, as we said, your hands, your face, and your feet, you know, in case you're on the road or something like that, with cold water. But you are permitted to eat meat and to drink wine. So therefore, Rava is reasoning right now as follows. He says, look, if a person during Shiva can eat meat and can drink wine, something that he couldn't do when he was an Onen, so why shouldn't he be able to bathe in cold water? Not in hot water, but in cold water. This is his reason. So Maisvei to this, they object. They bring a contrary quotation. They say, we have a statement which says, Ein habogeres rasho lenavelis atzmo ben mei evil oviho. Or nara rasho, right? Now, we learned when we studied Kedushin, what is the difference between a bogeres and a nara and a yalta. Mm-hmm. Okay? Three different stages in the life of a girl, right? To begin with, she is a yalta. However, once she reaches the age of 12 years and one day, she becomes a nara. And she remains a nara only until 12 and a half, exactly. So we learned, once she passes, you know, 12 years, 6 months, on the first day, she now has become a bogeris. She has become now an adult woman. And we learned, you know, different laws connected with Kedushin, you know, about the Kedusha Yaldo, Kedusha Naro, and the bogeris. And of course, the Torah also mentions about the business about a neder, a vow taken by a girl or by a Naro, a maiden, right, and by a bogeris. And the age affects, you know, what the restrictions are going to be. So, once a girl is a bogeris, even though she's 12 and a half, but in those days, you know, girls matured at an earlier age. So that, therefore, she's now become so-called, you know, like a kalamedel, okay? In other words, a candidate for finding a chosin. Well, if that's the case, so we have a ruling over here which says that the bogeris is not permitted to make herself look meus. Translation? Ugly, right?
I can learn.
Okay. During the days of mourning for her father. Now, why mourning for father, not mourning for mother? This they don't answer. But it seems to me that there could be a psychological reason. At least it seems to me, okay? Psychological reason would be, if she loses her father, there's all the more reason why the family would want to do what? To marry her off, right? So that, under those circumstances, she is permitted then to, you know,
pretty.
To make herself look pretty, look attractive, so that even though she's in mourning, but maybe a shidduch will come along, you know, if somebody sees her and he likes what he sees over there, so he may propose marriage to her afterwards. But Nara, the girl who is only 12 up to 12 and a half, she's not, because she's not going to be married off. So she has to observe, you know, also not to do what? Not to doll herself, you know, not to use cosmetics and things like that, as they say.
Not to use makeup.
Right, right. Well, I think I'll stop at this point because it's practically time for minutes. So we'll start from the top of the page over here.
Okay.
And yes, I'll share next week.
We're on.
We're now on Yud Gimel on the base.
On the base.
Right.
And it's
he brought out the question early on about the.
All right.
This is Yud Gimel Amud Beis.
Yud Gimel Amud Beis.
And it is June 8th.
Today is June the 8th.
Right.
Hey, Gevald. Where did the time go?
I need to have it so I can mark my...
Right, I know. Good evening. How are you, Sam? Okay. All right. All right. We're at the top right now of Yud Gimel Amud Beis. However, actually, we ran over a couple of lines on the top in order to complete the idea that was quoted in the name of Rava at the bottom of the previous page. Let's just look back for one moment, okay? Omar Rava, Rava says over there, that's the last line on the previous side, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It says, Ovel mutar lechotz betzonein kol shiva, right? That Ovel is permitted to bathe himself in cold water all 7 days, in other words, during the time that he is observing Shiva.
Right.
And on what does he base it? So it's Mida Dahava, he makes a comparison between the act of bathing and also... Mm-hmm. Being able to eat meat and being able to drink wine. As we explained, if you remember, that there are actually three different stages in Avelis, or four if you wish. The first stage is called Aninus. That's the stage between the time that the actual death takes place until the time that the burial takes place. And during that time, the Torah specifically prohibits the use eating, meat or drinking wine. This we learn incidentally from the story in Parsha Shmini that we read several weeks ago about Aaron losing two of his sons, his first two sons. And Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to know, why didn't he eat the chatas today? Because after all, as a Kohen, you should be eating chatas. And Aaron answered, if I were to eat chatas today, would it be pleasing in the eyes of God? In other words, here I am in deep mourning. Why should I eat, meat at this particular moment? Obviously, the sons have not been buried, you see, at this particular moment. So, from this we learn already that, and also the fact that immediately afterwards, it's written that God said, to Aaron, that Yayin v'sheich al tesht, you are not allowed to drink wine, during the time, of course, that you perform the divine service and so on. Okay. So this is how we sort of derive the prohibition against eating meat and against drinking wine during the period of Aninus. Okay. That's stage number one. Stage number two is, of course, Shiva, which is the 7 days that begin from the time of burial and concluding, of course, through the seventh day of mourning, counting actually the first day, as long as the burial takes place before sunset.
Same day.
And something is observed in mourning at that time, so that counts already as one full day to Shiva. And of course, we also have another rule that says that on the seventh day, as soon as the morning comes, you observe the Shor Achas, which means, a small amount of time in mourning. So at that particular point, you are released from the obligation of Shiva. But nowhere does it say that you're not allowed to eat meat or drink wine during this time. So therefore, Rava is basing his argument upon the fact that, look, if an ovel is permitted to eat meat and wine, so therefore he should also be permitted to bathe himself in cold water. Okay? So this is Rava right now. And that's when they ask the question about the Bogeris, which would seem to imply that she is given exceptional treatment by virtue of the fact that she's a candidate for marriage. And what would be the exceptional treatment? The exceptional treatment would be that she's permitted to bathe bechamin, right? In warm water. This is in order to keep herself pretty. Okay. All right, so now to that, of course, they raised the following question that Rav Chisda said, this is line 4 now on Omut Beis, right? Objection is, for Omar Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda said, look, Obil also lahosh vesboi b'chamin, afilu lav, lalav b'tzenik. Excuse me. We have to punctuate it correctly. Ovel also lahoshetes boi b'cham. Rav Chisda says over here that it is prohibited for an ovel, person in mourning, meaning of course a person who is observing Shiva, this particular point, right, to stick his finger into warm water. So el alav b'tzoneh. So are we to assume therefore that it means that in cold water it is permissible? So they say, no, we're not talking in the case of the Bogeris about whether she can use hot water or not, but a kichul ufir, but we're talking about kichul. Kichul means that she puts a sort of like a mascara or something on her eye. They used to paint their eyelids blue with a certain chemical called kohl, K-O-H-L.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, it's a dyed blue or something like that. This was an old custom, I mean, that the women used in order to look pretty. Okay, that's kichul. What is pirkus? Rashi here gives an interpretation of pirkus which is not borne out in another place in the Gemara. Not in this Gemara, but in Gemara. In Kesubas, and it's also the quotation is found in Gemara in Sanhedrin. Rashi interprets over here as kichul, meaning that she's not permitted to make plaits of her hair, you know, to twist it around, braids, to make braids of her hair. This is how he interprets. But, you know, the Bulgarians should be able to do that in order that she should look more pretty, right? But the Nara naturally cannot do so because she's not married. This is, as I said, one interpretation, but the other interpretation would seem to imply that Pirkus is not that, but Pirkus is actually using cosmetics on the face or something like that, which to me makes a little bit more sense because I don't see that braiding the hair would particularly be an isser, except that it's true. I mean, that in general, the question is, can an Ovel comb his hair, for example, during Shiva? Should he look terrible, or is he permitted even this one little luxury of making a part in his hair so that it doesn't look so frightening, I mean, to the people who come? It's a question as to whether it can be done or not, okay? We'll see in a moment that in certain respects, today, we're not quite as strict as some of the things that they propose. All right. So, Lema, are we to say then that Messiah lay to come to his support is a statement the Omar Rab Abba HaKohen, that Rab Abba HaKohen said, Mishum Rabbi Yosef HaKohen, in the name of Rabbi Yosef HaKohen, says, Maaseh U'meisu Bono Shal Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina. We mentioned that last week, yet too, okay? That there's a story that you know, the sons of Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina died, and of course the understanding is that they lied one after another, right? The Rochatz Betzoneh in Kol Shiva. And what did he do? He bathed in cold water all 7 days. So in explanation they say Amre Hosam, there in the case of Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, it was an exceptional case. Why? Because it was Bishete Kochfuhu Avelo Zerchazeh. He suffered the loss of his sons one after another. How many sons died, we don't know exactly, but in the Shulchan Aruch they paskin if you have even two. One dying, you know, after the first one had died within the same week. So this is where the law is applicable, and the law permits certain things, right? The Tanya, as we have learned, the Chafuha Avelo Zerchazeh, that if he has avelus, in other words, he has lost people who are close to him one after another during the same week, is the implication. So we learned that Hichbitza Aro is, and at the same time his hair has become heavy on him because he didn't have a haircut, and so his hair has grown until it becomes a burden to him. So what is he permitted to do? He's permitted to make al Bisar, he's permitted to make it lighter by using a razor on his head, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's permitted also to wash his garment in water, because presumably, he's wearing the same garment day after day. So in order to permit him, to wear the same garment for the second Avelis, so they permitted him to wash in between the two Avelis. So Omer Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda says an explanation for this particular statement that we've had. He says, Bisar, yes, he's permitted to lighten the weight on his hair, in other words, to cut off some of his hair with a razor, avoloba misparai, but not with scissors. In other words, the idea being that he has to cut it with a razor, but he shouldn't do it in the ordinary way in which we would expect a barber to work, namely by using scissors to cut your hair. Okay? Bimayim.
What is the word for scissors?
Misparayim.
Misparayim is scissors.
Yeah, misparayim is scissors.
Okay.
Bimayim, he's permitted to wash the garment with water. Velo b'nesa, velo b'chol, velo b'ochol. But not with nesa, which we explained last week is natron. In other words, it's a form like, it's like alkali soap, okay? Yeah. Also not with sand, which apparently was used in order to smooth, or as we, last week one of you, I forget, suggested that it's like a pumice or something,
yes,
like that.
Yeah. Right.
Right? Velo be'ohel. And also not with ohel. Alright, the question is, what is ohel here? It has nothing to do with the word which means a tent, but it's related to the English word aloe. Okay. A-L-O-E. That's a certain plant that has, like, medicinal purposes. As a matter of fact, today they use it to heal wounds and things like that. Yeah, also in the soaps, some of the soaps they have it, right. Aloe, right. Excuse me, it's a little bit on the horse side the last few days. Yeah. No, I got a candy, thank you. When I get desperate, I'll take another one. Okay, I just want to point out, we had on the previous page about Rav Chisda, right? It says, there it was in the name, okay? Right, there it was anonymous, if you take the third line from the bottom. You see over there? Chofu ha'velu zeh ha'zeh, right? Hichbit zeh ha'meko b'zeh ha'mechavitz kesuse b'mayim. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So therefore, Rav Chisda, in explaining, right, Rav Chisda says, b'zeh ha'velu b'zehrayim, right? B'mayim v'lo b'neis ha'velu b'chol. What is the missing word? In the new quotation, they quote him also as adding the word aloe. Okay. Excuse me. All right. So he added another thing that he's not allowed to use in order to, let's say, release the dirt from the gun. Okay. Iko de Amre. There is, however, a different version of what did Rava say. All right. Remember. Before, if we look again at what did Rava say, let's take a look again back on the previous page. At the last line, right, where he says, Ovel mutor lirchots mitzonin kol shiva, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Alright. And he says that the Ovel is permitted during Shiva to bathe his bathe, but bathe in cold water. Okay. Now here's another version. Iko de Amre, they also say Omar Rava. or their loss of its sonane called Shiva. Here they quote Rava saying what?
Is even permitted.
That the ovel is prohibited.
Prohibited.
Prohibited from using cold water all Shiva, which certainly is a contradiction to the statement that we read at the bottom of the previous page.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't bathe it out,
That's what
this is what they quote here for Rava at this point. Of course, what the halacha is, this we'll see when we finish. Okay? But as we see, there's now a contradiction as to what did Rava say. Did he say that you are permitted to bathe in cold water during Shiva, or did he say that you're not even allowed to bathe in cold water? Right? So they say, again they ask the same question. Well, before they said mida dehava, you can compare it too, right? But now they say, why is this different from the permission for the ovel during Shiva to eat meat and to drink wine? So they had to give a different explanation. In other words, the previous one made like a comparison, right? Rava says over there on the previous page that just as the ovel is permitted to eat meat and to drink wine, so therefore he is permitted to bathe his entire body, right? So now over here they say, he says that you're not allowed to use cold water. So why then is he permitted to eat meat and wine? In other words, this destroys the comparison that was made on the bottom of the previous page.
Did he make the previous comparison?
No. The previous comparison?
Yeah.
Because what he said is, look, if you give permission to the ovel to eat meat and to drink wine, therefore he should be permitted to bathe his body in cold water. In other words, he was being more lenient over there than Rav Chisda, who prohibits it. You understand?
Now he prohibits it.
Right. Here, he's being quoted as prohibiting it. Of course, you have to remember, when it says Iko de Ombre, there are those who say, because these were not put down in writing, these traditions. These traditions were transmitted orally. And because they were transmitted orally, sometimes it could happen that you get contradictory statements in the name of the same person. Here he's quoted as saying this, and here he's quoted as saying the opposite. Okay? All right. Now, if we assume that now Rover is of the opinion that you're not allowed to use cold water, which is, of course, the opinion of Rav Chisda, right? So now the question is, then why do we make an exception to eating meat and drinking wine, right? So they answer, Hossam, namely, in the case of the meat and the wine, the reason for that is that the kuche pachtehu de ovid. It is in order to permit the ovil to get over the fear that he has. In other words, if we didn't permit him to eat the meat and the wine, he would be in such tremendous fear and trembling because of the death of his loved one that happened to him. So we have rachmanis on him. We want him to at least feel a little bit nechamas, we would say, a little consolation in the midst of his loss. So that therefore this is the reason why they permit the drinking of wine and the eating of meat. So, lema, are we to say that Messiah lay in support of this? We have another statement. And what is the statement? Well, okay, what we had at the top of the page before, Ein habogeres rashol and navel atzmo, right? That the bogeres is not permitted. Right?
What's a bogeres?
Bogeres, as we explained, any girl, once she reaches 12 and a half, she's automatically an adult. Boger means adult. In modern Hebrew, that's how they use it, boger, bogrim, and so on. Sometimes they use it in another sense today. Now, a boger is somebody who graduates a higher school or something like that, okay? But that's a modern use. It was not the use that was used in the time of the Talmud. Boger is somebody who has become an adult, okay? So it's boger in masculine, boger in feminine. Of course, in masculine, we learned, when does a person become a boger? When does a man become a boger? 13 and 1, right. doesn't have to have the ceremony, but he automatically becomes that once he reaches 13 a day. Whereas with the girl,
13 a month or 13 a day?
13 a day.
Oh, it was set a month before.
It's like Rafa, you know.
Yes. Is that what I said?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Slip right, from my tongue.
Right. Just want to get it right.
Apologize.
Now we can see how it happens to Rafa.
Rafa, yeah, Rafa, right. Got right.
Believe me, I don't know, my tongue plays tricks on me. All right. So now, they again, hey, didn't we have a statement that says, Ein HaBogeres Rashoah, that the Bogeres is not permitted, the Navel Atzmo, to make herself mis, right? Make herself ugly. Ho naro rasho, but the naro, in other words, the girl who's not yet 12 and 6, she's only between 12 and a day and 12 and 6 months, she is permitted to do what? To make herself look mis. In other words, she has to observe all the laws of mourning from which her older sister would be exempt in this particular case. So they asked Bimai, what is the Bogeris permitted to do in order that she should not be Mias? Ilemo Bechamin. If we say that she's permitted to bathe in warm water, which seemed to be what we said before, right? This seemed to be the implication, that she was permitted to bathe with warm water. So, Ein HaBogeres Rashoah. We have a statement that says the Bogeres is not permitted. In other words, he's throwing this time the Ein HaBogeres Rashoah not upon the idea that she's not permitted to make herself mias, but simply she too cannot what? Use the hot water. But what is the exception that she could do? She could bathe in cold water, right? But still, this is the contradiction to whom?
To Rav Chista.
To Rava.
Rava, right.
Rav Chista's consistent. He says no, right?
Rava, right.
Right. The Omer Rav Chista, didn't Rav Chista say, Ove Elosil Hoshed Espoi Machamin? That the ovel, you know, the person of mourning is prohibited from sticking his finger into hot water. Elolav Bitsoining. So we must assume then that it would be permissible to stick your finger into cold water. So they say, lo akichlo fikus. No, what we're talking about is about the cosmetics, whether she could use the kohl on her eyes or use cosmetics on her face and so on and so forth. So at any rate, we're not 100% sure whether the Bogeris would be permitted or not, right? But there's a lot of statement would seem to imply that she's not allowed to bathe in hot water. Okay? She's permitted to bathe, exception given to her case, because she has to look nice for a suitor. But because she is in mourning, she cannot do it in hot water, but she can only do it using cold water. Okay. So this is where the matter stands at the moment. So now we get back to Rav Chista. So I'm Rav Chista. So Rav Chista said, Zosameris, in other words, what do we learn from all our discussion? Okay, rule number one, Ovel Osebetech Boses Kol Shiva. The Ovel is prohibited from doing laundry. This is what Techboses would imply. Okay, as we said, washing his clothing, right? He is prohibited from doing any kind of laundry during Shiva. Okay. It doesn't even say that you could do it in cold water, if you remember. Mm-hmm. He's being very strict.
He's got to wear the same clothes.
He's being very strict.
Yeah. You
have to wear the same garment, right? The only exception that they gave, you know, was about the person who was, who suffered an additional loss during the same time.
You can't, in other words, you have to wear the same clothes. You can't change your clothes.
This is
a problem.
Right.
With underwear, it's already a question. In those days, they didn't have a change of underwear every day either, you see. So that, therefore, that if a person, would wear the same undergarments, let's say, all week, it was tough, but it could be understood, okay. However, in our case, where we are used, let's say, to changing our undergarments every day, The question is, to what extent do we observe it? I mean, obviously, if you're going to have an undergarment that's going to smell.
The more slim permitted it. He didn't.
It's the base. Right. I mean, it's a. You know, this is already in a modern American adaptation. You know, what do we do?
For health reasons,
exactly. I mean, you're sitting shiva, and you know, you're wearing the same undergarment.
You're not supposed to make yourself sick.
It's the outer garment that you shouldn't change.
Right.
The outer garment should not be changed.
I see.
Right. Yeah, that you should wear during shiva. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is really where it boils down to today, as far as our practice is concerned. Okay, so this was rule number one as far as laundry is concerned. The hilchasa, and another halacha, is ovel osir lichotz kol gufo. The ovel is prohibited from bathing his entire body, bein bechamin, bein mitzonein, whether it is using hot water or whether it is using cold water, kol shiva, during the all the days of shiva. Avol, however, Honov, Yodov, Raglov, right, his face, his hands, and his feet. Bechamen Osur, it's prohibited to use warm water for washing them, but Betzonein Mutar, those you can wash with cold water. So,
so hot water is prohibited.
In any case.
Right, the, you should not use hot water.
The only thing you get out of it is not to give yourself extra comfort.
Right.
Because
this is
water.
It is
the water, but it's the comfort of the luxury.
Right. It's exactly the point. I mean, about the idea that it's a luxury to use warm water, and you know, you're luxuriating in it, so to speak. Exactly.
I can see the point. Even for the young woman, that she should keep herself attractive.
Right.
But who cares for 1 week?
But at the same time, right, for 1 week,
yeah,
I mean, that
she
shouldn't luxuriate.
Morning,
right. This is why the second point opinion, you know, said that you have to interpret it that way.
In that part of the world, the climate is so warm, cold water isn't bad either. It's not a cold climate.
Yeah, right. But still, I mean, the law is universal, so to speak. In other words, we apply it not only to warm climates, but we also apply it to cold climates as well. There's no question about that. Yeah. So this is what the halacha is. Again, whether the individual is such as, for example, we had the case of Rabban Gamliel, if you remember right, the beginning of the first chapter in Brachas, second chapter, that you know, he lost his wife and he wanted to observe shiva for his wife, obviously, but he said that as far as bathing is concerned, he had to bathe, because he says I'm very, very delicate in nature, and I have to do it for the sake of health.
So he did bathe.
So he bathed for the sake of health.
Yeah.
So if we're all in the same category, being an Eastern is, so you know, we can bend the law a little bit, particularly because in America, again, you know, we are used to daily bathing or something like that, which is something which is not necessarily so in other parts of the world. But this is a decision that would have to be made. I mean, we know specifically what the halacha is. Halacha is against it. But whether you can make an exception or not, well, this you'd have to discuss with your individual rabbi and find out. Okay. Now, besides that, he also has something else. Obel, excuse me, right, the Betzede Motor, okay. Obel Losuch, Apil Kolchehu, Oser. For an ovel to anoint himself with oil, with all kinds of onions, you know, they used in order to, so that the skin would be fresher, and they would make them feel good. I mean, when, you know, they felt a certain glow in their, over their body when they were able to anoint themselves with oil. So it says, Ovel Lasuch Apil Kolchehu, to anoint himself even in the slightest amount is also it's prohibited. However, the yim la'avir is hazu hamor. The question of removing filth, in other words, he's gotten very dirty, and this is the way that they use to remove the filth. So in that particular case, mutar. In that case, it is permitted. And yes.
The what is the noun that goes with la suf? Siach.
Okay, sicha. Samach yud chav hey. Anointing.
I'm sorry. What would be then in a perfume in this using this room?
Well, this is not perfume. The word that they use today for perfume happens to be bosom.
Right, bosom. Okay.
Bosom, like besoming,
bosom.
Right.
Yeah.
Using this samach yud hey, what would there be a word?
It's not samach yud hey, but it's samach either bob or yud chot. This is the root. Losuch is the verb itself, and sicha is the noun. We find that, for example, in the laws of Yom Kippur. The last chapter of the Gemara Yuma, where they speak about what you have to observe on Yom Kippur, what you're not permitted to do. So there, they mention about what we speak, what we call the inuyim, in other words, the things that they do in order to afflict yourself. Okay, so that rechitza, the sicha, right, and also kibbutz and things like that. That of course achilu shesiyah. These are all in tashbish hamita. These are all the various things that we are prohibited from doing in the observance of Yom Kippur. So as I say, the word sicha is the noun that is used over there.
That's for anointing.
Right,
is there any particular word that would refer to what that was being put on your body?
Shemen is normally good. Okay. In other words, they use shemen. Shemen is oil. This is what they anointed themselves with. Today you can go into CVS and see a million types, but in the final analysis, they all have some sort of an oil or cream or something like that. All right, so the halacha pretty much follows exactly what we have over here, and the fact the im la'abir sazuhamor, to remove filth, it is permitted. So the Shulchan Aruch takes it one step further and it says, for example, if a person has, let's say, pox or something like that, that you have
right.
To, right. So in that case, it is permitted. Why? Because in the final analysis, why is it prohibited? What is prohibited is shel ta'anuk. Right. For enjoyment. You're doing it because you get pleasure out of it. But if it's not shel ta'anuk, it's because, let's say you have a health problem that has to be attended to. Otherwise, you'll be suffering greatly if you don't take it. So then in that case, it's permitted. Okay, so now we get weiter. The Gemara now goes back again to what do you have to say on the Tainus Sivan, what prayer, alright? And we know, of course, what? That the prayer which is added is
Aneinu.
Okay. Right. So they come back now to the prayer Aneinu. So Gemara says, "Selosa d'taniso heche matzchirun." How do we mention heche? It's how and matzchirun. How do we mention? In other words, where do we mention selosa d'taniso, the special prayer that we say on a fast day? So the Gemara has an interesting story. It says, "Under a Rav Yehuda, Rav Yitzchok Berei." Rav Yehuda took his son Rav Yitzchok for a walk. the Dorash. And you see, when they walked, I mean, they were talking Torah. Okay? So he gave the following interpretation. He said, Yochid Shekibal Alof Tanis, if an individual has accepted upon himself a Tanis, that he's going to fast, so Mispalel Shel Tanis, then he prays the special prayer for a Tanis. In other words, he says, Anenu. Veheichan Omro, and where does he say it? So the answer is, Ben Goel Lerofe. He says it between Baruch Ator Hashem Goel Yisrael and, you know, Fo'enu Ator Hashem and Lerofe. In other words, how does he say it? He says it as a special bracha, all by itself. You say, and you know, if we would take a look in the Siddur, and we see that in the repetition of the Shmona Esper, whether it's in Shachmas or whether it's in Mincha, the Chazan has to repeat between Goel Yisrael and between Rifa'enu. This is where he adds a special bracha. He says Anenu, and then he concludes it, Baruch Atah Hashem, Ba'oneh B'yes Tzora. Praise be thou, O Lord, who answer us in time of Tzora, in time of distress. Okay? So, Rav Yehuda is with the opinion then that even an individual who has accepted upon himself to observe a fast, when he davens Shmoneh Esrei, so he adds this bracha in between Goel Yisrael and between Befoed. Okay. Maskelor Rav Yitzchok. So Rav Yitzchok objected to this. And he said, tell me, he says, can an individual make a special bracha for himself in the Shmoneh Esrei? The fact, I mean, that the Chazan says it, that's because our sages said that this is the procedure for a fast day. And so, and I mean, of course, for a public fast day, okay? So because they said it is the procedure of the public fast day, therefore it is permitted to add an additional bracha to the Shmoneh Esrei. But otherwise, are we permitted to add any additional bracha to the Shmoneh Esrei? So of course the answer is no. Of course, that brings us back immediately to something that we learned in the Gemara in Brachas, which, if you remember, the question was raised in the academy, who can create for us a prayer against the minim, against the sectarians, you know, those who were. And so finally Shmuel HaKotan came up with the idea that, you know, we should say Shin Mal Tisigvo, and the original version probably read V'chol HaMinim Kerega Yobedu, and so on and so forth, okay? Which incidentally is still the reading that you find in many other Siddurim, particularly in the Nusach Sfard. There you find V'chol HaMinim. We farbessed it a little bit. We changed it V'chol HaYivecho Meherek HaReisu, as in one version that you'll find in the Birnbaum, or V'chol HaYiveha V'chol Meherek HaReisu, as we find in the multicolored Siddur, which of course is based upon old European Siddurim. I mean, after all, they didn't
what
just
is the
create
second version of Siddur?
V'chol HaYiveha V'chol Meherek HaReisu. May all the enemies of thy people be going to be cut off, and so on, okay? But the more original was probably V'chol HaMinim Meheri HaKareza. May all the sectarians be going to be cut off, okay? Alright, so that is because, as we say, this is a Tainus Tzibur, that we added, you know, the special bracha. We'll see a reason for it a little bit later on when we go further in the second parak, okay? But as we said, as a result of the fact that Level Malshina was added, although I got a different theory from another teacher of mine, which I'll tell you in a second, okay? The result is that even though we call it Shmoneh Esrei, which means 18 brachas, and this, after all, is also the terminology which is used, either they use the expression Shmoneh Esrei, or they use the expression Yud Ches, which is short, of course, for Yud Ches Brachos, the 18 brachas, right, of the silent prayer, the Amidah. But today, in reality, ever since Vilna Malshinim was added, so it has become 19. But they don't want to use 19 after using for centuries the term 18, which was the original count. Okay? As I said, I had a teacher who came forth with a different theory. He said Vilna Malshinim actually was part of the Shmona Esrei to begin with, but what they did was to break up the Yerushalayim Iricho and a Semach David into two different brachas instead of being one big bracha. Originally, his theory was that they said, you know, Yerushalayim Iricho Toshu, the Kashavatov, and Yisuf Kamiyani, and Yisuf Kamiyani, right? In other words, something along those lines is the way it was. And then, of course, the bracha concluded with the Baruch HaRashem, maybe something like Yeshua or Voni Yerushalayim or something like that. As I say, it's his theory, nobody else supports it. Okay, but it was an interesting theory. And I found something that might support the theory in one of the special prayers that I saw that is added either on Purim or in another one I saw for Tisha B'Av, where they do not separate, there's no separate paragraph for in between these two. But as I say, it's not the accepted view. The accepted view is what we've mentioned.
But isn't there a provision that you can add a prayer for in this one essay? It's not a personal prayer.
Okay. You raise a very good point. But the point is that the personal prayer is something that you add not as a separate bracha.
No, you don't make a bracha.
Right. You add it only, let's say, in in Shomei Tefillah or at the conclusion. After Shalom, you add a special prayer or something like that. Okay.
Add it on and report.
Yeah, correct. It's permissible also to add to that. But again, we're not making a separate bracha. Whereas here, when the Chazan says Aneinu on a fast day, it is actually a separate bracha. So that therefore, what Rabbi Yehuda is saying to his son Rabbi Yitzchak is that he should do what they do in the shul. Make a separate bracha and put it in between Goel Yisrael and Rafaenu. Okay? And to this, the objection was raised by Rabbi Yitzchak. He says, hey, a yochid, an individual, does not have that permission to add a separate bracha to the Shmona Esrei. The yochid can be a bracha that's from Rabbi Yitzchak. So rather, it's Rabbi Yitzchak, Bishomeyat Fila. It's in Shomeyat Tefillah that the individual says Aneinu. And of course, it's the practice that we use even for ourselves on a tiny Sibur. That, in between, you say Aneinu. V'cheinu ma Rav Sheshes, and Rav Sheshes also concurred with this idea, namely Bishomeyat Fila. So now they raise the following objection. They say, Meisbe. They ask the following kasha. Says ein bein yochid le tzibur, there should not be any difference between the yochid between